Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to showcase one of America's newest centenarians, Ray Lee of Fresno, California, who reached the century mark on March the 6th. Ray was only 18 when he enlisted in the Army, ultimately assigned to Company C of the 322nd Medical Battalion, part of the 97th Infantry Division.
They sent us to Camps San Luis Obispo for amphibious training. When they say amphibious training, I knew where we were headed for, Pacific. So we took a Camp Cook, went to Camp Cook, Camp San Luis Obispo. They run us up and down the Pacific coast, landing on the 101 highway. They had to stop the traffic, and we had to land there and participate in invasion. All infantry guys go up the hill, and we come in with the LCVP, and we had the life belt around our side. And then we drop. As soon as we hit the beach, we drop the life belt, and then you run. You can't run. Everybody was seasick. Sand was sandy. You know how sandy? You're trying to carry heavy equipment, a litter or something like that. You just can't move. Just like you're just paralyzed. And the Marine standing there, he was instructing us, run, run, get off with the ground, run. Trying to get us off the ground. We were too sick, seasick. We were riding in those LCVP, the circle, smelling that diesel smoke. Everybody was sick.
That doesn't sound very encouraging. That wouldn't give you a whole lot of confidence to do that for real overseas.
Well, we were supposed to land, our division was supposed to land in Tocqueville. Tokyo Bay. There were three divisions involved, the 95th, the 97th, and the 104th. We were supposed to be the frontal attack. We were supposed to be involved in that. Good thing that I signed an armistice. Otherwise, I won't be around to tell you what happened. Yeah. But anyhow, the war came to a halt, so we landed. They didn't have no pier to unload the troops. We had to take our LCVP, hit the beach, get off, just like you're making a dry run on an invasion.
But you saw a whole lot more of the world before that. So you're training for the Pacific, but then the Battle of the Bulge happens, and there's casualties, casualties, casualties. So they pull your division and say, you're going to Europe?
I was surprised. I thank the Lord that we were going back to Europe instead of going to the Pacific. If we'd gone to the Pacific, I wouldn't be here to tell you what I was involved in. Anyhow, we order changed, so we had to go back to Camp Kilmer. Well, that's where we shipped out, POE. Wake up next morning, I never seen so many ships around us. Man, there was a bunch of ships.
So what did you encounter once you got to Europe?
Well, shocked me when we landed in Le Havre, France, and then we all took off, get into the 2.5-ton truck that took us to Fay Camp. And I looked around at the harbor, everything was all shot up, burned, completely demolished. I'd never seen so much wreckage. Man, it was a shock. And then we went to the village and I seen burnt-out buildings, and it was more of a shock. And then they got us to Camp Lucky Strike. They had Camp Lucky Strike, Camp Ogo, Camp different cigarette. They had different camp to prepare yourself to get ready to go to get assigned to one of the army that's on the line. So the engineer had us learn how to dig up mines, landmine, booby traps. We didn't know anything about it. They were blowing off explosives all the time just to get us used to the sound. And that was kind of scary. And then we had to learn how to dig up the mine. I had three guys in the line go out and dig up the mine, Teller mine, glass mine, S mine, and I didn't know what the heck S mine and booby trap, all that stuff, but I sure learned a lot. The engineer was blowing up explosives just to get us accustomed to it.
Here you're trained to be a medic, and now they're saying you're going to be disabling these mines that can kill you if you make a wrong move. How nerve-wracking is that to try to pull up a mine without it going off?
Well, you know, they're teaching us when you probe it in the ground, you go at a certain degree. You don't go directly on top. You might set off that explosive. So they tell us when you dig up a mine, you holler mine, two of your buddy back off, and you're responsible for the mine. And he said, never dig up the first mine. They have another one behind it, a pressure mine underneath it. You lift off the top, another one goes off. The Germans were really smart. They were really clever. Everything that they manufactured was right to the teeth, not like a Mickey Mouse. They were completely to the teeth. They got fine equipment.
I'm just thinking, is that where you celebrated your 21st birthday? In Europe, right after you got there?
Well, I didn't have time to think about that. All I was thinking about, hoping the heck I'd come out alive. That was the main thing. We were thinking about that. I don't want to step on a mine, and that was it. They got a lot of mine out there. So they had to light up an area with a ribbon, stay on the path. Otherwise, a lot of minefield around you. Especially in France, they had a lot of minefield. I didn't know what a mine was, but I shouldn't find out.
I'm sure there are a lot of things that you saw that you'd never seen before. Where all did you guys go with the 97th Infantry Division?
Well, we were assigned to the Rhine River. We had to clean up the Ruhr pocket. They had a pocket up there where our division went up there and cleaned it out. And we took Cologne and Dusseldorf, those two big cities. Just kept going. We were assigned to old General Patton. That guy, he didn't know when to stop. He was constantly going, you know. Every time he could start going, he said, where are we headed for? Nobody knows. We're just going, got our orders to head straight ahead. We go end up in Czechoslovakia. We liberated Pilsen. Our division liberated Pilsen. And then we went 3-4 miles out of Pilsen to a little small town, Mice, M-I-E-S. That's where we got ordered to come back because General Patton wanted to go to Berlin. We were headed for Berlin. It was over there in Czechoslovakia. We was going to head to Berlin, and Eisenhower told him to come back, let the Russian take the casualty. So we came back to Germany again, regroup ourselves.
Well, and speaking of casualties, I mean, this is what you trained for, caring for casualties. Yeah. Did you ever get to do that?
Yes, we did. We had a lot of casualty. We were working in an aid station. One of our unit, we got captured. They were assigned to another infantry outfit. They had about 2 ambulances and about 4 guys to a litter, a little, 4-litter squad there. And the German came in and got them that night. One guy stuck a P-38 right in the guy's face. Ouch, grouch, grouch, grouch. They took them out. They took 2 ambulances and 4-litter squad and some casualty, American casualty, took them. And they took them, and about a week later, they turned them loose.
This was near the end of the war in Europe, but I want to explore a little more of what happened leading up to VE Day. And since we're recording this here at the Veterans Memorial Museum, home of the Legion of Valor, where you volunteered for 27 years, and everybody listening should check out the photos and video of that at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. But I think there are some pretty relevant items here in the Ray Lee Room at the museum. We see the helmets with the Red Cross painted on them, just like you wore. And we even see the field medic kit that you would carry with scissors and bandages and morphine and everything else in there. Can you give me an example or a memory of how you would have used that kit in the field?
I was up there at the battalion aid station, and we would have some patient come in. They were wounded. Well, we had a battalion surgeon. He would check them out and decide what to give them. So we would follow up on their battalion surgeon's order, again, bandages and few things like medication, stuff like that. In a serious case, we would send them back to the clearing company. They would send them back to an evacuation hospital where they had more equipment to take care of the person. We just have just a minor item up as like having a Band-Aid. We just give them Band-Aid treatment. That's all we had up there. We didn't have all the heavy equipment like the evacuation hospital.
So are you saying you didn't see too many of the serious wounds? Or were there some things that you witnessed that you still think back on and you say, man, that guy sacrificed a lot for his country?
Yeah, you know, I've seen some, I don't want to talk about it, I've seen some pretty bad stuff. We had some German prisoner come in, the poor guy was shot up pretty bad, and we couldn't travel at night. We stayed indoor because if you travel at night, you would get shot. So we stayed in a little house, and this guy, German prisoner, was in the other room. He was moaning all night long. Man, we couldn't sleep. He was moaning all night long till daylight, and it was pretty hard to take. And in the morning, we evacuated him on a litter. We took him out, get ready to put him in the ambulance, and I said, he's gone. don't use put them in ambulance. We might as well leave them right here for the German civilian to put them away. You know, that was something I never forget.
Did that experience of being a medic with the 97th Infantry Division as you're going across Europe, you know, in early 1945, did that give you an impression or an understanding of how much courage these American soldiers had? Can you maybe give us an example that comes to mind of what illustrated that for you?
Well, we came up on the Rhine River at night. We were assigned on a certain area, and it was raining cats and dogs and lightning. And we were standing out there like some troop back over to the German side. They were setting, both sides were reconnaissance, and they were checking our defense out, and we were checking those guys out. And finally, we got word that the 101st Airborne was going to take that position, so we moved out. The 101st came in, took the line of defense right there on the Rhine River. I was glad I didn't have no weapon. Boy, I sure feel naked out there. What are we doing out here? It was just like a bunch of jaybirds, you know, no weapon, just a medical kit. That was crazy.
And how did you cross the Rhine?
Cross the Rhine, they had a pontoon bridge. An engineer got together, got the pontoon bridge, so we went across in our ambulance. We had an ambulance. Our company had some ambulance, and I was in the litter platoon. We did all the dirty work, you know. The other guy, they sit back and they were in the luxury. We did the dirty work.
Well, I've got to ask you what that means. What was the dirty work? What were the dirty things you had to do?
Well, yeah, we have a latrine pit, garbage pit. Well, we had to dig all that stuff for the wheels. We had three platoons in our company. We had a station platoon, we had an ambulance platoon, and I was in a litter platoon. We did all the dirty work, and we were considered unmentionable. It was a good experience. Yeah, learned a lot.
What about close calls that you experience? Do you remember sometimes, I mean, you just told me about the Rhine River where you're a little nervous, but were there some situations where you realized how close you were to getting wounded or getting killed?
Well, there was three of us. We were standing out in a little village in a courtyard and was out there chewing the rag. Three of us were standing there. Pretty soon I heard a boom. Incoming mail. Boy, when I heard the incoming boom, We took off. Those three guys and myself, we hit the stairwell, and we all got up and started laughing. Pretty soon we heard another boom. So I took off again. I ran around the house, and I seen this big old bomb shelter. I was going to jump in there, but I lift up the lid. I looked down there, and there was some German civilian in there. I said, oh, no, not for me to be jumping in there. So I dropped the old trap door, and I went around the house. I dug me a foxhole from the other side where the shell was coming in. So that was one of my scariest moments.
Well, that's one of the questions that came to mind. What were the scariest things you had to deal with? Because at different times, I mean, you could have bombers going overhead, you could have artillery coming in, mortar fire, machine gun fire, mines. What was the scariest thing for you?
Well, a company commander, he was the one that got orders from the higher up echelon to tell us where to move. So we moved into this little town, little village like, and we seen a lot of white sheet hanging out on the window of the doors in the village, and we was out there chewing a rag. Pretty soon I looked up, there was a company of infantry was coming up the road. There were platoon size, they were on each side of the road, and the captain was leading them, and he come up to me and he said, "What are you people doing up here?" I said, "Isn't this town taken?" He said, "Hell no." And I said, "Wow, we're in trouble." So I took off, and he continued his way up forward. That was the closest I ever seen. We took the town without knowing it wasn't taken. Man, I tell you, the OC, the company commander, he really, really screwed up and almost got us all killed. Good thing this infantry company came out and asked us what the hell we was doing up here.
So you're walking around without a care, not knowing you're in danger and there's enemy all around you.
Yeah, that's true. We heard shots going on, firing going on. We didn't know what was going on until they came up and told us we were not supposed to be up there. And we were up there ahead of the infantry. Boy, I tell you, that was one of the screwiest moments I've ever experienced.
And I know some of the stuff is difficult to talk about, and I'm not trying to twist your arm. So if you say you don't want to talk about it, don't. Are there days where you still, in your mind, see or hear or smell something from years ago?
Well, I never forget the smell of death. It's something that you never forget the smell. Body odor, it's one smell you never forget. They had a lot of these cases come up. They were on the wagon. They were all covered with straw, and we were downwind, and then we got a pretty good whiff of it, and we knew exactly what was going on when we got the smell. They were carrying these civilians. They were all on a big wagon. They were covered with straw. All you see was just feet hanging out, bare feet hanging out, and you never forget. There was quite a few civilian casualty I seen, and the smell was horrific, especially when you're downwind.
Did you have a clear understanding of what you were doing there and why it was so important for all you Americans to be there?
Well, we were in there for the service of our country, to liberate the country and help the people out. That was our job, and I was kind of happy to be one of the group that was there to help the people out, liberate and serve my country, and appreciate for what the country had done for us since I was a kid.
He's not a kid anymore, but he hasn't lost that youthful enthusiasm or his sense of humor. You'll hear more of that and more memories from Ray Lee's 100 years and counting when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 1,800 veterans will have seen their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.